Volume 11, and making pretty good progress through that. You come to this particular chapter as the... I've got it wrong. And you... Well, it's not the first chapter where you get hit with an incredible amount of detail. It's nuts and bolts sort of stuff, just in terms of the detail regarding the tabernacle. So the chapter that, this chapter in particular, is an identification of the various materials that go into, that are going to be required for the building of the tabernacle. Now the tabernacle is where the Lord dwells. Make a house so that the Lord could dwell amongst the children of Israel. And so while we, you know, this chapter sort of puts a focus on the meaning of representations and in clarifying representations, it talks about the fact, of course, the Lord can't be contained within a physical structure. And so everything is representative. And those representations have to do with the human mind, how the mind is to be constructed in order that it can hold what is of the Lord, how the mind is to be structured in order that it can hold love and wisdom. And it's very much a process. And I was interested in the fact that when Julian brought out the fact yesterday in chapter 24, how that is like a linking chapter. You have this Moses being called up the mountain to receive instruction from the Lord. This elevation comes after another incredibly detailed series of chapters that have to do with laws and, if your ox damages your neighbour's ox, what has to be done. It's all this kind of detail that's being laid out there. We did that at the Victorian seminar just prior to this one. And the detail can tend to, you sort of look in, you sort of stand back and you think, my goodness, you know, am I ever going to be able to get my head around this and what it's about? Well, thankfully, it's not really about getting your head around it. It's about just getting a feel for it, actually. I think that's probably the most important thing, and something that Ian Arnold, in fact, has emphasised over the last number of years, the importance of getting the feeling of what's going on and then moving into building a sense of understanding around that. And that is certainly true for this. So I've just handed out a sheet there, which is my attempt at trying to narrow things down to a one-pager. You know, and we're dealing probably with 80-odd pages of fairly concentrated material in the Arcana itself. Now, can I just ask, did people manage to read these chapters prior to coming? Who hasn't read?
You mean in the Bible or in the Arcana?
In the Bible.
Oh, yeah, I
read it a while ago.
Okay, so I'm going to get us to read it. I think that's probably a good way to approach it, and then we'll run through the summary. It is broken down. If you just look on your handout there, there are four basic areas that it falls into. If someone would like to read that verse, which is Exodus 25, 1 to 8, and it's the Lord instructs Moses as to the materials required. So if you have access to a Bible, can everyone look on to a Bible if you've got any out? Okay. So just someone just pick up on that, please. The first 8 verses.
Not sure. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they bring me an offering. From everyone who gives it willingly with his heart, you shall take my offering. And this is the offering which you shall take from them: gold, silver, and bronze, blue, purple, and scarlet thread, fine linen, and goat's hair, ram skins dyed red, badger skins, and acacia wood, oil for the light, and spices for the anointing oil and for the sweet incense, onyx stones and stones to be set in the ephod and in the breastplate, and let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them.
Right, thanks, Ruth. Someone else pick up from, actually it should be verses 9 to 22.
Yeah, I'll do that. According to all that I show you, that is the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furnishings, just so shall you make it. And they shall make an ark of acacia wood. 2.5 cubits shall be its length, a cubit and a half its width, and a cubit and a half its height. You shall overlay it with pure gold, inside and out you shall overlay it, and shall make on it a moulding of gold all around. You shall cast 4 rings of gold for it and put them in its 4 corners. 2 rings shall be on one side and 2 rings on the other side. You shall make poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. You shall put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark, that the ark may be carried by them. The poles shall be in the rings of the ark, they shall not be taken from it. And you shall put into the ark the testimony which I will give you. You shall make a mercy seat of pure gold. 2.5 cubits shall be its length, and a cubit and a half its width. And you shall make 2 cherubim of gold, of hammer work. You shall make them at the 2 ends of the mercy seat. Make 1 cherub at one end, and the other cherub at the other end. You shall make the cherubim at the 2 ends of it of one piece with the mercy seat. And the cherubim shall stretch out their wings above, covering the mercy seat with their wings, and they shall face one another. The faces of the cherubim shall be towards the mercy seat. You shall put the mercy seat on top of the ark, and in the ark you shall put the testimony which I will give you. And there I will meet with you, and I will speak with you from above the mercy seat, from between the 2 cherubim which are on the ark of the testimony, of all things which I will give you in commandment to the children of Israel.
Thanks, Dave. Who's zoning out?
Oh, no.
No, no.
Good, no.
Not yet.
Good, good. So 25, 23 to 30.
Yep, I'll read that one. Make a table of acacia wood, 2 cubits long, 1 cubit wide, and 1.5 cubits high. Overlay it with pure gold and make a gold moulding around it. Also make around it a rim of hand breech wide, a hand breadth wide, and put a gold moulding on the rim. Make 4 gold rings for the table and fasten them to the 4 corners where the 4 legs are. The rings are to be close to the rim to hold the poles used in carrying the table. Make the poles of acacia wood, overlay them with gold, and carry the table with them. And make its plates and dishes of pure gold, as well as its pitchers and bowls for the pouring out of offerings. Put the bread of the presence on this table to be before me at all times.
And 31 to 40.
And I'll do that.
You shall also make a lampstand of pure gold. The lampstand shall be of hammered work, its shaft, its branches, its bowls, its ornamental knobs, and flowers shall be of one piece. And 6 branches shall come out of its sides, 3 branches of the lampstand out of one side, and 3 branches of the lampstand out of the other side. 3 bowls shall be made like almond blossoms on one branch, with an ornamental knob and a flower, and 3 bowls made like almond blossoms on the other branch, with an ornamental knob and a flower, and so for the 6 branches that come out of the lampstand. On the lampstand itself, 4 bowls shall be made like almond blossoms, each with its ornamental knob and flower. And there shall be a knob under the first 2 branches of the same, a knob under the second 2 branches of the same, and a knob under the third 2 branches of the same, according to the 6 branches that extend from the lampstand. Their knobs and their branches shall be of 1 piece. All of it shall be 1 hammered piece of pure gold. You shall make 7 lamps for it, and they shall arrange its lamps so that they give light in front of it. And its wick trimmers and their trays shall be of pure gold. It shall be made of a talent of pure gold with all these utensils. And see to it that you make them according to the pattern which was shown you on the mountain.
So what's people's impressions of what's just been read?
The phrase that came to me, David, late on in during Cor's reading, is this is somebody saying to me, this is somebody saying, I know exactly what I want.
Mm.
Okay? I know exactly what I want. It's so specific. Not so detailed, but so specific in its authority. I know exactly what I want. That's what I got.
Reading the instructions were for these numerous objects, candlestick, mercy seat, table, and you just get the strong feeling that these are all physical things that are going to represent spiritual realities. It's got to be the case. Mm. This is God. Mm. He's not telling you to do something, do a craft. You know, so there's meaning here. There's got to be spiritual meaning.
Mm. Lovely, mate. So the fact that it is so detailed implies that there's more here than meets the eye.
It reads to me like a recipe. It's very specific, and everything, every component, how it fits together, you've got to do this, then that, and so, such and such. And yeah. Without that, the recipe would fail. It'd be a flop cake or
good point.
Wouldn't taste right.
The first impression I had was, oh, my neck is going to be heavy with all that gold. I mean, it's just gold everywhere, and the whole mercy seat's solid gold. I mean, I don't know how much gold weighs, but I imagine it's pretty heavy.
It weighs a lot more than that.
I can imagine being, being given this piece of paper and saying, okay, you're the goldsmith, take this. What on earth for? What are you going to use all this detail for? I'd be assuming so. Why?
What strikes me with this, and you sort of skim over all the detail, I go, okay, whatever, here's one off the shelf kind of thing.
Here's one I've prepared.
But there's several times where it says it shall be of one piece, not broken up. It's normally you get, like today, everything is flat packed and put together, and this piece connects with that. This is like all one piece. So it's like incredibly difficult in some circumstances, I would imagine. But it has to be pure. I talk about pure gold, one piece, so there's no blame. That's the sense there.
Coherent,
no seam.
Everything else. So.
No seam.
No seam.
What struck me about it is it's not moulded.
It's hammered. Yes.
Something that, imagine you take a lump of gold and you make a candlestick out of hammering it.
With pomegranates and...
And the amount of work that represents is quite.
Yeah. It just proves God is a pedant. Necessarily so.
There's an incredible complexity about achieving what's laid down, even at a natural, literal kind of historical kind of level. You're asked to do something which you know, remember, we're out in the middle of the desert, you know, and we're being asked to do this fine work, you know, with precious materials. So that complexity is a point that I want to emphasise. And so you're given the recipe, and now you have to implement it. So what comes to mind that this is a recipe for the development of the human mind, essentially. What Swedenborg would term the celestial and spiritual realities. You know, how do you feel with regard to following this recipe?
Well, this is the hard work that we saw Swedenborg go through with the word explained. Surely. You know, we've got... But this is an offering. It starts off with the offering of the people.
Yeah.
So we've met with the Lord. There's been some connection formed in 24, and here is a response to that connection, which then provides the materials to ground it. So that's where I relate to the word explained. My first reaction to what
he took
about,
a hammering.
Yes. Yeah. But my first of my reactions to what we're talking about with the word explained is you could take everything you said and say, well, Swedenborg made it all up himself. He worked on it himself and he came up with this thing that we now call the
Deductive.
Whereas I don't see it quite that way at all. I see it as the word explained is him working through the process of being able to provide a grounding for the revelation he received, which is very different.
Swedenborg wrote it down.
Absolutely, but it was not from him.
Yeah.
It was not from him. Whereas you could take the word explained and say, oh, here he is, he hasn't quite got it right. Well, he's going to start again, and he's going to get it right this time the way he wants it. And there's no... It doesn't need God in the equation.
Yeah.
But that's not
so.
Where I'm at.
The word "explain" is coming to the realization that I haven't got a clue.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so it opens him up in that sense. So that, you know, that's humility. It's an acknowledgement that this is far too big for me, and there is no way that my great brain, as powerful as it is going to master this stuff.
Is this how we should see the apocalypse? Explain and the apocalypse revealed. Is that what you're saying? Just so I want to get onto this.
No,
is that the apocalypse revealed is equivalent to the arcana and the word explained?
I wouldn't say so myself. But we're not given reasons why the apocalypse explained was left off in the end. But I mean, you only have to engage with it to see that it's of a totally different quality to the word explained.
To the apocalypse review.
No,
the word explained. It's a much different...
It's not the same, you know.
Yeah.
So...
Can I just say something, David, quickly?
Yeah.
And that is, flashing through the next 7 or 8 chapters, it's interesting because you've got this is a command for gold, okay, and bring an offering... gold, silver and bronze, and then it's sort of described and outlined, and then of course they build the golden calf, and then when that's been penalty paid,
ground to dust and drunk
then very soon after that you've got the call for the gold to be brought. Okay, so you've got this gold, golden calf, gold, nose rings, earrings, finger rings, and so on, from among the people. And you know, it's a sort of interesting sequence, again, in this sort of struggle, breakthrough, of having to go through a golden calf time before you actually can offer your ringlets and noselets.
Because this is actually telling them to offer it, but they haven't actually brought
No. They haven't brought anything.
So
all the gold is from Egypt.
Yes, and all the gold is from Egypt. Yes, all
so, so here is an instruction on how to do something. Then there's the process of disobedience, because the earrings are an act of obedience, a reminder.
Yeah.
The rings, a reminder of a relationship, and so on, and that all gets used up into this false idol made of that gold. Mm. So they're forgetting themselves, they're forgetting the process, they're forgetting the focus, and then they have to get rid of that before they come back to it and actually do the right thing. That's how I see it. Mm.
So I want your gold now for the real thing, but we drank it. Right. So I want the gold you drank.
You get the potato
that's working through. That's working through you.
Yeah.
You see, in that sense. Anyway, enough.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So when you so just reading the contents now. So this chapter describes the offerings for the tent, for the tables there, and also for Aaron's garments. It then goes on to give the directions for making the ark, the table of the loaves of the presence, and the lampstand, which were to represent the heavens, where the Lord is, and all the celestial and spiritual realities which are from the Lord there. The dwelling place itself represented heaven, the ark there represented the inmost heaven, and the testimony or the law within the ark represented the Lord. The loaves of the presence on the table, together with the lampstand, represented the celestial realities from the Lord, and Aaron's garments represented the spiritual realities from him in the heavens. And then just from the spiritual sense section, just a discussion there on the tabernacle, we see the tabernacle was constructed in such a way that it might represent the three heavens and everything there. The ark, which contained the testimony, representing the inmost heaven and the Lord himself there. This is why, when Moses was shown on the mountain the form it should take, Jehovah said at the same time, to the end that they make it, that they may make for him a sanctuary, and he may dwell in their midst. Everyone endowed with any ability to think on a deeper level can see that Jehovah could not have dwelt in a tent, but that he dwells in heaven, and that this tent is called the sanctuary only because it presents an image of heaven and the celestial and spiritual realities there. For the realities which are represented in outward forms do indeed reveal themselves in a similar way in the lowest or first heaven before the spirits there. But those in the higher heavens perceive the inner things that are being represented, which, as has been stated, are the celestial realities belonging to love to the Lord and the spiritual realities belonging to faith in the Lord. It was things of this nature that filled heaven when Moses and the people, moved by outward holiness, venerated the tent as the dwelling place of Jehovah himself. For this is evident, what a representative was, and also that by means of it, heaven, and so the Lord, was present with mankind. It's an incredible statement. It gives us a little bit of an insight into the place that physical elements have in terms of the connection from the Lord right down to the ultimate level of life and creation. Now, the Israelite church was described as not as a church, as described as a representation of a church. So it wasn't a true church. It is a representation. So things had got to such a point in terms of spiritual and celestial knowledge of spiritual and celestial realities that they had to be represented in a physical, concrete form in order that when those things were beheld, even though they weren't understood as to what their true function was, the veneration that they produced in the people was still able to ground something of the Lord at the lowest level of life. So things had sunk down to a pretty low level. And that the building of the tabernacle and its representations and all that were there to create a sense-based experience in the mind which higher levels of being could still have grounded their sense of the divine. So everything is interconnected all the way down the lowest level. That's what comes out here.
And because they were only representing a church, rather than being a church, spiritual church in themselves, that to me suggests the greater concentration on absolute detail, believing that the detail is effective to do it for them.
Of its own accord.
Of its own accord. A little bit like the Pharisees in the New Testament, you know. You don't readjust your hat, because if you do, you're breaking your law. You wear it as it should be worn all the time, every time, and that is efficacious in atoning you to God, and you'll get your reward, you see. It was the same thing here. But if they'd been a spiritual church, they would have... well, that's a big if, isn't it? You know, if. But if, say, they had been a spiritual church, the danger could have been that they could have seen too much and injected some of their own stuff into it rather than mechanically carrying it out 100%.
So well, that's what Jesus came and said, you know, we don't need to stick to all these laws so rigidly now. That was the whole thing when Jesus came.
And yet they served a purpose, because they maintained the representations without corruption, as representations only, without carrying them out.
And with them being recorded, they serve as a representation for us. This is the point, I think, that at an ink and paper level, what you have is recorded a representation of heavenly and spiritual realities. Now, as I look at those, there is stuff going on at different levels of consciousness. And I might never get beyond the mere letter, but that doesn't stop the fact that there is stuff going on, because with the word being divine, it takes the form by which the divine can be grounded throughout all those different levels of our minds, if you like. So the representation in terms of a physical building has is no longer there, but it remains actually here in the description. So it serves, what now happens is that the word actually serves that function that tabernacle would have served back in those times.
I just noticed the similarities between this and Revelation. Here we've got one lampstand with seven lamps, and it's talking about seven bowls. As in Revelation 1, you've got seven lampstands, and in Revelation 16, you've got also seven bowls.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, there has to be a connection.
And there is.
But you can see that one also is a vision, obviously a spiritual sort of experience. It relates very clearly back to what's happening here.
Lovely, mate. And what you find in when you read through the section in the Arcana, there is a constant reference through all these chapters, references to the book of Revelation and what's evident there. So... essentially, just in terms of the themes that exist within the AC, as you go through it, there is some general themes that recur throughout, and that is the function and use of representatives, their connection with the human form, and relations between inanimate and animate forms being in the human form. That's the point. So what you get in there is a number of references to the fact that this tabernacle and its parts, if you like, are individually and collectively in the human form. Okay, so the detail is such that the when you read about the ark and the poles in the ark, they're described to be like arms. And so you have these descriptions being tied back to the body, the actual body, as an illustration of the mind.
So it's okay, it's not the general idea of the grand man, that its function.
Its function, that's right.
Yeah. Well, its function that's important, and shape isn't actually the issue. Whereas what I'm hearing you saying is that the actual shape of the tabernacle is poles is arm-like.
Yeah.
So you actually get shape and function.
Yeah, in a sense, but the shape has to be explained almost.
Yes, of course, it would have to be.
The rings are described as the sockets. You know, with a power to holding has to do with the power to maintain and keep something in existence.
To socket.
Yeah, that's right. there is the idea here, and it comes in with the mercy seat, which sits on top of the ark, and I'll show you a picture in a minute of this, has to do with the forgiveness of sins. Now, I spoke yesterday about the inter-chapter material, the material that precedes the chapter, and the material that just follows on after the chapter. In this case, Swedenborg, in his comments on charity and faith, is dealing with the theme of the forgiveness of sins. So that theme is something that runs through these chapters, in particular this chapter, the forgiveness of sins, and or the remission of sin. We may come to that a little bit later on. Also, the theme that the Lord's divine human as the source of all good, and that good and truth being all that really exists, or the only thing that is real. Okay. And then the idea of the nature of good and its power through truth in organizing the spiritual world. So there are discussions about the distance of certain angelic and spirit beings from the Lord, and that distance is an appearance, and it occurs according to a person's reception of good and truth. The ability to receive, those that receive more good and truth are closer to what the Lord is. So that's the idea there. And those that receive less are further from what the Lord is in terms of the image that they present. And that's how distance is understood in the spiritual world. Now, coming to the recipe idea,